Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
Hello, I'm Richard Hattersley, and welcome to No Accountant for Taste, a podcast for accountants from accountantweb.co.uk. This week, we review the latest Westminster rumours and the latest riders and runners for next week's budget, explore some of the reasons behind the profession's talent gap, and ask, are the big software developers on the same wavelength as their accountant partners? Later in the show, we'll also be taking a sneak peek at the first signs of MTD ITSA software in today's big discussion. But first, let me introduce my co-host and someone all too familiar with geeking out about the latest accounting technology. It's John Stockdyke.
Hi, Richard. Thanks a lot. Yep, you can geek out on the tech. And of course, you can always geek out on tax. You know, there's spiritually, I'm sure there's a lot of connections between those two camps that hopefully we can explore today.
Brilliant stuff. And we are also joined in Accountant's Corner by another technology aficionado. I'm delighted to welcome to the show the head of accounting at the online cloud accountancy firm Bofix. It's Aaron Patrick. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, as I just said, I love nothing more than geeking out as well. So really excited about the topics we've got lined up today.
And Aaron, a little like LinkedIn stalking tells me, along with your role spearheading cloud accounting, a YouTuber and a chartered accountant, you're also a butcher's assistant. A cloud accountant through and through, though, because I noted that you also brought in new systems to that business too.
Exactly. You can't do a job, can you, without actually having to bring in a bit of cloud accounting at the same time. So yeah, it's a way of keeping on top of everything, you know, de-stress after a bit of time, you know, enjoy butchering at the same time. So yeah. Kind of hopefully can give a perspective of a small business that way.
Brilliant. Well, later in the show, Aaron will be telling us more about his exploration into the great unknown of MTD ITSA software and his efforts to get into a beta. But first, let's take a look at the three biggest stories shaking up the accountancy profession this week. And at number three, with less than a week before Rishi Sunak delivers his November budget, we asked some experts in tax to draw up their wish list of fiscal announcements. And this week, regular AccountWeb contributor Philip Fisher published his fantasy budget, which contained measures designed to promote levelling up, climate change and global Britain, while also seeking some simplifications to what he called some ludicrously complex raft of tax. So we've got days away from the budget, John. We've got Philip's take there. Any there that you think may actually appear in the Chancellor's speech?
Yeah, but Philip didn't realize, sort of came out of the fairly radical corner. Some dramatic moves. I think the simplification call to merge income tax and national insurance and kind of unify it all on a 13.5% rate. That's something many practitioners have been just crying out for years, as would cure a lot of just decades worth of stupidity around self-employed personal service, or not self-employed, but around personal service companies. One of the members did point out that it would probably cause craziness in the amongst pension voters and lose the Tories their votes for centuries. He also had some radical suggestions about stamp duty land tax, eliminating personal primary residence relief, which would certainly raise some money for the Exchequer, but probably not a vote winner there. So he was prepared to grasp some tough nettles there in the interests of both simplification and revenue generation. The most radical thing, I think, the thing that appealed to me, his simplification proposal was that the Treasury should be required to reduce the volume of tax legislation by 33%. Mm-hmm. So that would be one way to focus their minds. So a lot of left field suggestions, Phil, but it's good to get the conversations going, and it really, you know, the members are definitely warming up to the excitements of next week. And I guess I should point out as well that Philip's not on his own. Neil Warren's given a similarly robust makeover to, you know, VAT treatments. He's suggesting extending the 12.5% rate and a few other things. And there's more to come. I think we're waiting for Anita Monteith's fantasy budget to arrive. So we've definitely got a new good seam of sort of the great and the good of our, you know, the stars of our firmament offering the Chancellor their suggestions, and the members really do respond in some interesting way. You know, it's quite a good sort of alternative policy forum, really.
Indeed, and surely with COP26 around the corner, and early signs suggest this may be the case, actually, we are might be due a green budget from the Chancellor. Aaron, what's any predictions from you as to what we can expect on the 27th?
Yeah, I think first of all, I just want to say how much I love the article. I think it just gave us that safe space to have a bit of a gossip, a bit of a, you know, a prediction. I think if you think back to the last budget, and if anyone had put in their super deduction was going to be one of the predictions, I think we'd all thought they're in cloud cuckoo land. So it's just fun to have these sort of conversations. I've got two bold predictions, I think. Well, I'll say two. I think one of them's kind of maybe a dead cert, unfortunately, but I think one of them's a bit more of a bold one. And mine, first of all, goes with capital gains tax. I think it's due for a hit, isn't it? We all know it's coming at some point. So I kind of see that at some point we're going to see the reduction from 12,000 odd to, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. I think they've been muted. And I think the big issue there is going to be with this new resurgence in crypto and stock. And I think that's going to be something where a lot of people are going to fall foul of that. You know, they found this new quote unquote hobby. They found this new way to pass some time. They found, you know, the world of crypto and the world of getting into stock has become more and more prevalent, and it's more and more accessible as well. So I think that's going to possibly cause some issues. I mean, that will cause a lot of people to suddenly have to stop worrying about CGT for the first time. And if you think about it from a landlord's point of view, you know, you've got MTD looming over them, and now you've got this possible CGT reduction as well. So I think more and more it's looking like it's going to be more, you know, maybe beneficial to move into or attractive to look into a limited company. So I think CGT is going to form a big part of it. And I've got a big, like, almost, if Rishi is listening to this, I please hope he doesn't take this away as an actual idea. But my fear, or my kind of, you know, prediction, if you like, is the fact that imagine they introduced a 30-day limit on all CGT transactions, you know, period. We already know how bad it is for the fact that, the you know, every time you sell a property and, you know, you do them quite irregular, hopefully, but it has been an absolute nightmare for us accountants to keep on top of that. And, you know, is it solicitor's responsibility? Is it our responsibility? Who should, you know, look after it? But just imagine that they move that over to all CGT transactions completely. And I think that would be the fear for me. That would be the yeah, you know, a big worry if they brought that one into play.
I'm a bit worried, Aaron, a bit like Philip, you know, that you may have lost some listeners there just by raising the idea. Hopefully it's too late for anyone in Whitehall to do anything about it, but be careful what you raise in this.
And then I think my final prediction, or at least hope, I think it's more of a hope than anything else, is a dream of the simplification of the tax years. With MTD being delayed, let's hope that gives the opportunity to flex out a 31st of March, or even imagine a 31st of December year end for personal tax return. You know, the idea that we could push everything into a nice yearly cycle, make it really easy for clients to understand and taxpayers to understand what the tax year is and when it finishes and when it starts. And, you know, for us accountants, maybe we get a September rush instead of a 31st of January rush instead. And maybe, just maybe, that'll be a more beneficial to everyone. So yeah, they're my two predictions: changing the tax year and also CGT having a bit of a shake up.
Well, we did get that OTS consultation and advice earlier on in the year, didn't we, around the simplification of the tax year. You suggested the end of September there, Aaron. Would that be more preferable to you than the end of January?
Yeah, I'm thinking more corporate side of things. And there's a lot less corporate clients who have a 30th of September year end. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have a little bit of a gap there. I'm just thinking, where can I put my workload in to try and utilize it? So it's a possible, but yeah, I think that that might be a little bit better for us than the 31st of January, in my opinion. But...
Very good. John, any other budget predictions from you, or are you kind of waiting to see until the big day?
I haven't done my budget planning but haven't got the budget. We have our awards and things we're worried about and our expo, so I'm behind on my budget prep. So thanks for putting them on the spot, Richard. I'll get back to you at the next podcast, shall I?
No worries. But let's move on then to our second most read story. And John, this is one from you. In recent months, as the article suggested from speaking with a few practitioners, it doesn't feel like the big software developers are on the same wavelength as their accountant partners. So, John, talk us through the story and how it came about.
Yeah, it's a rare occasion I get to discuss my own working, so it's a bit embarrassing, but I won't toot my own horn too much, because this is one of those editorial themes that emerged from our new insight service that we're developing. It's something primarily we're doing with vendors, and it grows on from all the software surveys we've done in previous years. But the first wave of the new research we did just came back with this thing: the vendors couldn't understand why accountants weren't recommending and installing as much software as the vendors wanted them to. There just seemed to be a disconnect between their expectations and reality, and they didn't understand why. So, you know, we thought, well, that's the point of research, then, to dig into that. But just on the back of that, we had a webinar that you actually conducted with Ainsley. It was with people who'd had feet in both camps: Ainsley Damery at Clarity, a previous award winner, Accounting Excellence Award winner, Will Farnell, who's, you know, king of the app world at App Advisory, as well as Farnell Clark, and Jessica Pillow, who developed a practice management cloud tool at one point, but actually decided she preferred being a practitioner. So they kind of had some really, you know, kicked around the issues. And when I kind of, you know, gave us a sort of picture, and it's essentially Will's view is that with the advent of MTD for ITSA and 5.9 million taxpayers and potential software users, the big platforms are sort of thinking accountants aren't the channel who are going to reach those people, and are turning, you know, they've got a bigger end game than the channel can deliver, possibly, or because the channel's not delivering enough of it, the vendors want to grab hold of more. So Jessica used the phrase of just over the pandemic, it feels like the vendors are a lot more remote from their accountant partners. And that whole theme just struck a real chord. There was about 30 comments from members giving some practical detail to fill in that picture. You know, it was something we just, you know, we thought there, you know, we could see there was a gap, but they've painted the how and why. Self-Employed and Happy, who's a QuickBooks user, talked very much in terms of, you know, you drew a parallel with the way HMRC is kind of going direct to the customer as well. And both them and the big vendors probably are not understanding or acknowledging enough the amount of support that the accountants are providing in that process. You know, they couldn't do it without accountants. And as we're seeing with MTD, that oversight is coming back to bite HMRC. But will the software vendors face a similar kind of difficulties in engaging with that much broader self-employed sole trader market? Aaron, do you feel the a bit more remote? I mean, I understand you are quite closely involved with QuickBooks. How does it feel for you with your vendor relations?
Yeah, so if I put on one of my other hats, so I'm also part of the small practice committee for ICAW. So we see this as a real area of awareness that needs to be kind of drummed up. There needs to be a better way for practices to understand the app stacks that can be best for them. Because in reality, in my opinion, I think there is some truly great software out there. And I think, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be quite techie geeky, like we said at the beginning. You know, my practice is very much run on automation. It's primed to pivot when new technology is there. But I know, you know, for me, I'm doing that because both my eyes are firmly fixed on the future. I see us in a bit of a halfway house at the moment between what software can do for us and what it can do. But I do feel like for the vast majority, I know from the vast majority of accountants that that's just not the case. And I think, dare I say, we're being a little bit hypocritical as accountants if we don't embrace that technology. I think, you know, for me, we've got to fully back the focus that these large tech companies like QuickBooks, Sage, and Xero, like you said, are focusing on the end user. And I personally think that's the right thing to do. And I think as accountants, we then just need to adapt and we have to figure out how to work for that. You know, I said I'm a trainer for Intuit QuickBooks. You know, I help design the courses that we do for doing them. And I do the course as well. I train the courses, and we're very much focused on trying to make sure that accountants can, you know, tell the end user and adapt the end user and teach the end user how to use QuickBooks properly and how that software can be best used. Because at the end of the day, if we can do that right as accountants, then we're installing best practices for our clients. We're making their data better. We're making their data cleaner. And with MTD being a big kind of parcel of what's, you know, what's coming and why this kind of shift, and you know, we're trying to focus so much on the software side of things, I think it's right that we are focusing the software developers are focusing their side and their resources into the end user. Because, you know, think about it from what's happened in the pandemic. If you think about what Intuit brought forward during the pandemic, they brought the cash flow forecasting tool. Now, for me personally, that's one of the best innovations we've had in a long, long time. And that's honestly, that's helped a lot of clients. That's given my practice, and when I'm talking to clients, it's given me that confidence of being able to really advise clients through really tough times, and being able to give them the opportunity to plan and adapt and discuss real issues about cash flow forecasting and how that's going forward. So if I had to choose between, you know, the cash flow planner being implemented and brought out early, which it was, or an MTD ITSA tool that's going to help my practice plan for MTD ITSA, then I'm going to choose the cash flow planner every single day, because for me, that's the key area of it. That's, you know, I want my clients to be using that technology. I want them to be embracing it. I want them to get the benefits out of it. And I also think for us as accountants, the way I'm saying it's a little bit hypocritical is I think we've got to see that as innovation. You know, again, slightly biased towards QuickBooks and my relationship with them, but even I struggle. Even I'm finding it difficult sometimes to work with some of the challenges that we face with, you know, with the fact that we're not getting regular updates. Because for me, you know, something as simple as being able to bill our billing, you know, our third-party costs from QuickBooks to our clients is a nightmare. And I've had to spend hours upon hours to develop a system so that we can automate that and make that simplistic for ourselves. But I saw that as a challenge for me that I've now learned from those workings, and I apply that now to when I'm advising my clients and I'm helping my clients. And it's like almost like I'm seeing the same sort of struggles that they're seeing, and I'm kind of being able to talk with them on there. And I think my final point that I just want to bring out as well is, again, a little bit biased here, but, you know, I worked on the research program for QuickBooks. You know, I worked on trying to bring that webinar and bring that recertification into the realm. And when I look back at what was announced and what we covered in the recertification program for QuickBooks Pro Advisors, there was a lot of accountant-focused innovations. I think we forget about them. So work papers, month-end tags, you know, even that self-employed income estimator that, although was kind of slated by accountancy firms and, you know, worried that it was going to lose us money, is actually designed for us as accountants to work with our clients with it, you know, give them the opportunity to understand their cash flow, give them time to understand what their tax situation can be. And I think, you know, there has been a lot of changes, a lot of updates that maybe have gone under the radar a little bit. So, you know, ultimately what I think for myself is that, yeah, there seems to be a focus on the clients first, but I think that's exactly how it should be. End user first. And as accountants, we need to adapt and we need to be prepared to build our own kind of, build our practice up a little bit more and be able to work with the software we've got so that then we can, ultimately bridge the gap that's been created.
I mean, we'll come back, I think, very soon to vendor relationships and product developments and stuff. But before, if I could just, this issue, I think, if there is a gap or a gulf, we're going to be working across that for the next two and a bit years at least, and if not beyond. So we'll continue to look at that. I just wanted to mention that we've actually started our second round of surveying now on some of those issues. So there'll be a story on the site very soon. So if you see a link to the sort of insight survey, do give us a poke on the link and let us know sort of around what your thoughts on some of those issues. So Dickie, time to move on to the finale, the big story of the week.
Absolutely, John. And of course, when it comes to the Insight project, that's going to be taken center stage at CounterWeb Live Expo in Coventry on December the 1st and 2nd. So be sure to register for your tickets now. So let's move to the most read story, which is on recruitment. It is the headache, which seems like it hasn't really gone away in years and years. I know it's something which many firms have been complaining about since the financial crash in 2008. But we are finding an increasing number of firms are encountering challenges in staff recruitment. A variety of reasons were put forward in this piece by Tallulah Brogan on Accounting Web, including training and development has dried up, with practices hesitant to take on applicants during the pandemic. Firms not focused on digital implementation, I find it more difficult to get the right kind of candidates, because they're going to be obviously looking at for firms who already have a fully cloud practice. So there's a variety of reasons why this is just happening. Aaron, is this something which you've encountered? Is it something at Bofix you'll find difficult to get candidates, or are you seeing this general trend within the profession?
So I can kind of see it from both sides. I've got kind of a story on both a positive and negative that's happened to Bofix. So from a positive point of view, the fact that we're now classed as a hybrid firm because of the pandemic and the fact that we offer that flexibility of working from home and also working in the office, it means that we've actually been able to recruit. And unfortunately, this is outside of the accounting world, so this is more for administration, marketing, that sort of role. But we've been able to really push our boundaries in terms of the recruitment. And from that point of view, it's been amazing. We've been able to open up and get really talented candidates, and we've been able to have some really interesting interviews. And what that means is that, we've been able to spread our wings a little bit, spread our net, and we've got some great talent that's come through because of that. So that's definitely the positive side of things. And, that was brought on by the pandemic, and that's brought on, accelerated what we were going to do as a practice. So that's definitely positive. But I do find that from especially the accounting world, it is full of negatives, unfortunately, at the moment. And I know the question was who's to blame, and I don't really find an answer to that, because for me it's, primarily for me it's the lack of understanding what accounting is. And I don't know if that's because our firm may have kind of pivoted on that. We're not a traditional accountancy firm, so maybe we are looking for a bit more of a different mindset than maybe we would traditionally look for. So maybe that's on us, and maybe that's our problem. But I do find fundamentally a lack of what the accountancy world is really difficult. So to try and combat that, we started a web series where we're trying to encourage young accountants or people looking at the profession to try and understand what the world actually involves. And that's scary to see what questions and perceptions that came up out of that. We do get a lot of applicants, but in my eyes, they're just not suitable for a practice-based role. I don't know, and I imagine, I'm only guessing here, but I imagine industry-based accounting roles might be having a better fit and a better influx of candidates at the moment. So maybe it's kind of just a balancing issue at the moment that's the problem. And I've tried to find clever ways to screen those applicants, because we are getting, inundated with applicants, just not at the level we would find suitable. So we've asking them to do videos before, as part of the application process, and complete an exam before the application process. We're trying to adapt our recruitment policy to try and, figure this crisis and try and find a way around it. Because I feel like, as a small practice, we're always going to have that issue where the bigger practices are, you know, taking up the first dibs of applicants, and that's always going to be the case. And, you know, not much we can really do about that. But, you know, from the candidates that we've got left, we've just not found people who are savvy enough with Excel, you know, have that empathy for clients. That seems to be lacking at the moment. And in my case, you know, people who are happy to adapt and be ready for that small kind of practice mentality. So I think there is a fundamental issue there, and I just don't know what to blame. And my kind of final point I think I want to make is that, you know, there has been incentives to try and help this. So the trying to recruit for the apprentice incentives, we found really, really challenging. We found to get past that line. So, you know, if I can have one more prediction for the budget, it's hopefully we're going to get an extension to the apprenticeship incentives. And, you know, the Kickstarter scheme ultimately hasn't really worked for us accountants. I think it's been very difficult for the job recruiters and job support people to send us over those applicants, because I think they're worried that if they send applicants over that's not suitable, then it's going to look bad on them. You know, on Saturday, I'm going for a talk in front of a lot of Kickstarters to try and prove to them why accountancy should even be considered for them. So I think there is a bit of an issue there and a bit of a problem. And my final point, I think, as well, is another challenge that we've definitely found is, although I said at the beginning the positive was this hybrid working mentality, well, that's also given us issues. So we were looking to recruit someone. We got them all lined up. Salary was fine. Job role was fine. They're happy with their prospects. But their sticking point was actually the fact that we put in the offer letter that from a hybrid point of view, for the first 3 months, 4 out of the 5 days, they must be in the office. And that became the sticking point that ultimately they didn't want the job in the end. And it's almost like now the remuneration package is now based on salary, job prospects, and now the hybrid opportunities as well. So yeah, I think there's a whole manner of issues there, but I can't tell you who's to blame. I think it's just something we've got to figure out together and figure out how to fix.
Very interesting. And I'm going to stick plan for jobs on the budget bingo as well, Aaron. I think that might be a safe bet. John, Aaron there mentioned hybrid, and that's something, a trend which we have been seeing coming up quite recently. Any other kind of trends or insights that you've picked up around recruitment that's kind of may answer some of the reasons why it's becoming such a difficult proposition for many firms at the moment?
Well, Aaron touched on the kind of behavioural and cultural issues, and you know, very specifically the expectation of the youngest sort of intake to have a high, you know, remote working hybrid life. You know, that appeals to the attitudes of the younger. I mean, some of the comments on Accounting Web, you know, from the older guard, where we're talking about the you know, attention span and commitment of the young generation. You know, they didn't go through the same, you know, they wouldn't be prepared to go through the same torments that older accountants remember all too familiarly. I mean, and I think that's an issue for the profession. And in fact, Richard, I'm probably going to turn the tables on you a little bit, because I mean, this is your subject. You know, my observation would be is it's always been there, and you pointed out the link back to the 2008. You know, student numbers have been declining ever since, and you wrote about it in 2018 as the hot issue then, the recruitment crunch, and just like everything else, COVID has accelerated and sort of deepened, you know, the underlying issues and moved, you know, pushed us forward into to having to confront the impacts that much sooner. So I'd be curious to hear your sort of take on it, how what you think's happened. Is there a sort of a key factor that maybe is emerging is stronger than anything else?
Yeah, I think the financial crash in 2008 did kind of dry up the training the training and development, especially at the big firms, and that ripple effect was really felt even back when I kind of investigated it a few years back, and it feels as if the pandemic has just exacerbated that a little bit more, and perhaps we're going to be feeling that that issue a few more years down the line. But it does feel like it goes deeper than that, and it is just down to just the general makeup of what practices look like these days and just what they want from a candidate. I think even back then in 2018, I was speaking with accountants who they were trying to fill a role which didn't quite exist, a person they had in their mind didn't quite exist for the role which they were trying to create. It was kind of a mix of part techie, part having some interest in accountancy and some more people skills. It was kind of the attributes of a person that they need wasn't quite there in the talent pool at that moment. So it really is it is a difficult challenge. And I know when we ask our accountant excellence entries each year what their biggest challenge is, a big proportion of those always say recruitment, and they are looking in different areas. Aaron, you mentioned apprenticeships. That seems to be a big one. But I think firms are kind of trying to look outside the box and maybe growing their own may be an option rather than looking for that person out there who may not actually exist. So I think it's just another one that goes along with the gentle evolution of a practice these days. It is really tough. But yeah, I think with the pandemic, it may kind of extend the issues for just a little bit longer. So yeah, I don't think we've got any answers really, but it just seems like it is still kind of tough. But I think that kind of brings us to the end of the most read stories. And then it leads us nicely into the big discussion of this week, which is the search for MTD ITSA software. Now, Aaron, you say that you've seen the first glimmer of MTD software implementation. So we're curious, kick things off. What have you heard, and what can you reveal?
Yeah, I think it came to a little bit of surprise to everyone that there was a QuickBooks Connect event this week. And I think there's a lot of kind of maybe mixed messages of who that virtual conference was for. And I think that's why as accountants, we weren't quite up to date on it or at least prepared for it. And especially in the circles that I was with, it was quite a lot of people surprised about the kind of fact there was an event. And to be fair, when you kind of look through the agenda and you saw what was there, I don't think it really was made for the likes of us in terms of kind of looking at product innovation and looking at that sort of thing. I think that will still be in a March event later down the line for their main event, or you know, possibly they'll kind of I know USA's in a couple of weeks time, so maybe there'll be you know, more announcements there in terms of product innovation. But the big product innovation there, or at least product announcement, shall I say, was the first look at the MTD ITSA and how it's going to be put into fruition. Now, full disclosure, I've been trying to get on this beta since day one and failed miserably. So I'm still, you know, I was really keen to see what the interface looks like, how it's going to kind of come to fruition for us. And we got that first look. So first of all, I'd say the interface looks slick, and you kind of expect that from Intuit. They've been always very good at kind of aesthetically and making sure that, you know, functionality hopefully goes with it, but aesthetically it's always been key. So that way was good. The actual area that it's going to be residing in is in the taxes section. So at the moment you have VAT, maybe CIS, you'll have an MTD ITSA section there as well. And the nice thing is it will show you those progress of all four quarters in a really clean and tidy process of showing you kind of a traffic light system, if you like, determining how that quarter's going. So green means it's been submitted. And the thing that kind of jumped out to me was the fact that it goes yellow if you make an amendment to that quarter, and that yellow is indicating then that you need to file the update. And what they're basically saying is you can file as many updates or as many revisions to that particular quarter as you like. And it's a case of, you know, if you have made an adjustment to a previous quarter, the ITSA software is going to tell you about it, and then you can then submit that going forward. The final bit is then at the end, when you're doing your year-end submission, is that you can't even submit that year-end submission until all four quarters have been updated. So if you had made an adjustment in a previous quarter, it's going to bar you from submitting that final year-end submission until that's been done. So that was quite handy to see, and that kind of answered a few questions I had in my mind of how this was going to be working and how clients are going to kind of interact with it. Mapping is completely automated as well. So within QuickBooks Online, when you add a chart of account, you are asked at that point how that's going to interact with tax software. And it basically follows through from there. So the description will follow through into the mapping side of things, and it'll then put into the right codes and the right numbers on their mini quote-unquote tax return, if you want to call it, that gets submitted.
We probably need to sort of jump in and sort of say, other applications might be available soon. One, there are other developments. The challenge is equally there for Xero and its Xero tax implementation. I don't think we've seen from them the glimmer yet. It's in the pipeline. It's coming from Xero. I think Sage are in the same boat. I mean, there is a beta program there, I believe. I mean, I think Free Agent are in the running, but the problem is there's only about 7 vendors, and it's all the sort of real sort of cutting edge innovators. Cirrus Stratus is in there, Forbes. The smaller companies are able to come up with stuff much quicker than the giants. It's sort of often it's one programmer spec person in house who's got their head around it all and can conceive the design as a single unity, within the small vendors. Thomson Reuters, TaxCalc are in the pending pile. And the thing is that the outlines, the APIs and the underlying structure has been there for several, since the aborted first wave of first attempt at income tax implementation. But I guess the problem is the pilot is still very restricted. So HMRC is parked it and doesn't have the, and anything vaguely complicated seems to preclude participation in HMRC's pilot. So if you actually want to test an application in live, you can at least see what it looks like and poke at it with the simplest of taxpayer requirements. But we're going to need a lot more than that. And I think everybody's breathing a sigh of relief. There is that extra year, but possibly that may mean the wait to see the actual physical form of the apps, the ITSA apps. It'll be late spring. It'll be after tax season. Self-assessment. Let's turn our attention back to self-assessment. But do you get a look at any of the other potential rivals to the QBO thing? Is there anyone you're watching in particular, Aaron, that you think?
Yeah, so I'm 100% interested in the rest of them, but they've not been forward in terms of showing kind of the interface or anything. I think that's fair, isn't it? I think it's fair that they're keeping themselves guarded in terms of not showing too soon, because at the end of the day, I think there's still a long time for this software to mold and change, and maybe kind of if they put forward an interface that doesn't look appealing, that could make decisions too soon, and they could preempt accountancy firms deciding on which platform they might want to stick their flag in and then sort of thing. So you can understand why they're guarded with it, because something as simple as the interface can have a massive knock-on effect, because with the amount of people who are kind of concerned about MTD in terms of the extra workload and what that's going to mean for us, then I think for accounting firms, it's going to be that interface that's going to make or break. For example, I asked the question during the live session, are they looking to bring a VAT error checker type analytics to it, machine learning type application to MTD? And they said, they're considering it, or they're hoping to bring that in, and that's part and parcel of the roadmap. So, I think it's going to be those little innovations that's going to determine which platform is going to be, an easier implementation at the first, especially at the beginning, for you to be able to mass produce these requirements that are going to be needed. So, hopefully this innovation or this start with Intuit showing their hand, hopefully that means that we can start to see the others and start to thing in. Because what we want is we want each of the vendors to bring something new to the table, which forces the other competitor to maybe implement it. And then, ultimately then as accountants and end users, we should get a better product overall.
And then it is interesting how they often converge on the similar functionality. That might be another reason why they're so reticent. Aaron, can I take you back briefly to something, to our first talking point? You know, we talked about the fantasy budgets and tax simplification and then all those little tweaks and tinkerings and quirks and rate changes that could be introduced to, you know, new reporting mechanisms and the like. What's your assessment of vendors like QuickBooks and Xero, you know, the giant platforms who in other jurisdictions they may have some tax expertise, but I kind of still, ever since QuickBooks said it was going to be coming along with compliance tools, I always wondered, did they really get quite how complicated you know, UK income tax is? And you know, MTD ITSA is still going to be this partial implementation because we're not going to have trusts and all the other, you know, bizarre form, you know, CGT reporting as well. That's outside another quirk of self-assessment. Do you believe and you have faith that those vendors will come through with viable tax tools for, you know, across the board for practices, or will we see a sort of revival in the prospects of tax calcs and BTCs, the people who do have a handle on, and Sage too, who, you know, have, you know, decades of personal tax and corporate tax expertise?
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? And I think for me, I think when you look at the vendors that you mentioned there, so Intuit and Xero and everyone else, well, Xero's already trying to get into that space anyway. We can see that. But Intuit, if you look at their other regions, especially America, that they live and die. That's where they've got their dominance from, isn't it? It's from producing personal tax solutions, and it's from bringing out that. And I know their tax system is completely different, and everyone basically has to have a personal tax return. So they've got more than a monopoly, if you like, and being able to bring that through. But they can obviously see the benefits of doing it all included solution. And, you know, for some end users, actually that's a massive benefit. And I think that's going to be something that, you know, for some end users, they're going to need, you know, your rental properties and people like that, I think is going to be really important. I mean, they did say in that call, so it's not, you know, it's not breaking any NDAs or anything like that, but they did say in the thing that they're like you've already said, they're definitely not going to be able to implement anything outside of the first kind of initiation of MTD from day one. But yeah, I can imagine they would ultimately be going after that carrot on the stick. And I think, you know, they've already shown in other territories, and I've seen the Canada product and how that works. And, you know, they've already not only asked you to go into a, because in America, it's kind of, they've got multiple software stacks that cleverly work together and it cleverly all integrates. Well, in Canada, it's all in one product. So, you know, they literally can just stay in the QuickBooks Online ecosystem and they can file all their returns and they can get everything done completely all within the product. So you can kind of see that that's probably where they would want to urge, you know, if they had a magic wand and they could create a solution, I think they would want to go for that solution just to keep everyone in line. Yeah. But I personally would be fighting for the better integrations and slicker integrations between your tax and accounting solutions. Because yeah. I think ultimately as practices, we're going to have to adapt to more and more and more and more software. The more slicker and the more easier we can get data from one software solution to another, ultimately, I think that's going to be better for us accountants.
I mean, it's a fascinating dynamic because, you know, this will continue and persist to 2024 and beyond, because, you know, it's if those, you know, Xero tax is already in there putting on a challenge, you know, for the lowest end of kind of customer solution, you know, for taxpayer solution. And, you know, that's going to disrupt the specialist tax and practice suppliers no end. So, you know, it's creates a lot of uncertainties and choices and churn for practitioners themselves. So a fascinating area that you know, it's going to keep me working for a few more years, I think.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Aaron, for pulling back the curtain and revealing some of these early insights. And I guess this is going to be the start of more to come over the next few months as we see more shiny, gleaming MTD ITSA software out there for the world to see. So thank you very much, Aaron, for joining us today. Thanks, John, and thank you everyone for listening. So until next time, join us as ever on accountweb.co.uk, and we'll see you again. Bye for now.